Thanks for listening to The Drive with Big Al and D-Mac, on demand, brought to you by SEL Mortgage, the leaders in Colorado of special circumstance lending, helping everyone, including people with unusual financing needs. Locally owned and operated, visit myspecialmortgage.com. That's myspecialmortgage.com.
Covering Training Camp 2018, presented by Body Armor Sports Drink. Here's Big Al and D-Mac.
A pretty nondescript day at training camp. It was a vet rest day for the vast majority of the vets, and they were in shorts, shoulder pads. So I don't know. Just one of those days. You know, it's funny when you go out there. It's just one of those days. I feel a little bad for the fans, Al. You know, I mean, yeah, it's still football, still the Broncos, still autographs. Nice day, the whole thing, but it's just one of those days. Not a lot of action.
I think the fans that go,
maybe they don't care.
Right. I think if the autographs are good,
right, that's all they care about.
Maybe a good day.
You're probably right.
Depends on your perspective. If you're a hardcore football fan,
right,
trying to get an insight on the best practices at, you know, blocking, catching. And, you know, special teams, I think you can still get that with them being in the kind of gear that they were in today. But, you know, it's, you know, the veterans need a day.
Oh,
the
yeah, veterans, yeah, yeah, of course.
The veterans, you know, I just come from different backgrounds of football and being able to play for a hardcore coach like Bill McCartney. Certainly got me ready for the NFL. Then when I got to the NFL, the things that I saw there were troubling because we would have goal line practice on a Friday before a Sunday game. And I didn't understand it. I was like, well, if you're going to do goal line, shouldn't you do that Wednesday just in case somebody gets, you know, because Wednesday is the heavy run day. Mm-hmm. Wednesday in the NFL is heavy run day. Thursday is a third down package and, you know, and second play action. So third down package and play action is usually Thursday. And Friday is a light bulb day where you kind of go through everything and make sure everything is tight. But early on in my career, it was normal across the NFL that you had goal line on Friday. And I couldn't figure it out. So when I see these coaches these days, who believe in protecting the players, I say, yeah, that sounds right. I mean, why would you want to get one of your better football players injured and not able to go out and perform? I mean, the salaries are, at some point, the salaries are enough to say that we just need to make sure they're in shape. Like, when you know your guys can play, you just need to make sure they're in shape. And the thing that practice is, to me that, it will always be to me is that practice is a way for coaches to see how this thing looks against real competition. Because let's face it, all of us draw up plays and we think it's going to work. Well, you have to put in the scenario and show that scenario on the field with the players in order to execute to make sure that it's going to work. So a lot of the practice is things that you think will work, and then you just scratch it out, and then it doesn't become part of your football history. And a lot of the plays that really work, as we saw last year with the Minnesota Vikings in that extravagant play for the touchdown in the Super Bowl, you know, that play has been run with them. They said they started working on that play in training camp. Training camp. So they started running that play in training camp, and they held it off until the Super Bowl. Just think about that.
Mm.
Just think about that. Just let that sink in. That's just one play. And they didn't use it till the end of the season. Coaches always put these plays in, and then training camp kind of, you know, is a vetting process. If it really works, we'll keep it in with the personnel that we have. If it almost works, well, let's try it again in 2 weeks, and then in 3 weeks we'll try it again. And if it doesn't work, we're just going to scrape it. And then, you know, you've burnt all those brain cells. Let me tell you how most coaches get ready for the preseason and how they use the preseason. They take an opponent, just call it the Seattle Seahawks, okay? They take formations and they start introducing those formations to the players this time of year after a 4 week of conditioning, a 4 week of practice, so that they can get used to seeing formations. So the first time that they see them, it's not a surprise. So it's a build-up process, and the veterans having a day off like today is good because the young bucks can go out there and try to get it in. I just think that our coaches these days are a lot smarter than they have been in the past. They're just a lot smarter. And the realization that you can extend guys' careers and make sure the guys are healthy by treating them the right way is a universal process. And I think when you look at it in the NBA, the way that Greg Popovich started doing it in this, and, you know, hey, my veterans don't play on back-to-back games on the road. Sorry, we're just not doing that. That was breakthrough type of stuff. But you know what? It led to them having multiple championship runs, and it taught the NBA how to treat veterans. So I think that the NFL, along with other leagues, are starting to get it when it comes to the care and welfare of their players. Except baseball.
Today,
kill your home.
So they're going to even go lighter tomorrow. And then just ball caps on Friday and the game on Saturday. So they're really taking it easy. And VJ said, you know, it's time to just, you know, let off the gas a little bit, you know, make sure everybody's fresh, that sort of thing. It definitely is a different approach. Did you watch Hard Knocks last night?
No bits of it. Yep.
Well,
no bits of it.
There was a moment where Todd Haley
wanted more action.
Unbelievable. Todd Haley in a coach's meeting is openly second-guessing Hugh Jackson's decision to rest some guys. Woo! I mean, like he said, I got to say something. You know, Todd Haley, I got to say something. I just think that, you know, you got to get out there and this, that, the other thing.
Right.
And I was like, what a weasel. What? Oh, like, nobody was asking for his opinion at the time. Todd Haley just said, I'm going to tell you the way it should be. Now, that is always tricky. When you've got an assistant who used to be a head coach, it's a tricky deal sometimes.
Todd Haley was a head coach for the Kansas City Chiefs,
mm-hmm.
and he was woeful while the head coach of the Kansas City Chiefs. But, okay.
But he sat in that chair being the head coach's chair. And then Hugh Jackson, as respectfully as he could, more or less to tell him to STFU. More or less. In much nicer words. He was like, listen, I've sat in that chair, and now I'm sitting in this chair. And I know it's different when you sit in this chair. It was a really good insight as how a guy who has won one game in 2 years keeps a head coaching job. You know, there's a moment that...
Knowing what you want to do?
At least he's assertive enough to you know, let everybody know who's in charge.
But also, you don't know...
He was respectful of Todd Haley. He wasn't yelling at him.
But also, you don't know if Todd Haley was brought in by John Dorsey, the general manager, or by Hugh Jackson, the head coach.
Well, John Dorsey is putting on a show on Hard Knocks, isn't he? He is... he knows the cameras are on. John Dorsey does. So I'm not really buying the John Dorsey act as the GM, but that being said, it's good to see him support his head coach. And it was a very, I haven't really seen a Hard Knocks like that because it showed the pain and emotion and difficulty in Hugh Jackson dealing with his mom and brother both passing away within 2 weeks.
And I thought that was too personal.
Wow.
Thought it was too personal.
Well, I mean, the coach is always going to be one of the stars of Hard Knocks. Always. Period. You have to show that.
Do you?
You do, definitely. Because
why not just close the door and give that man a moment?
You could make an argument about how to edit it and present it, and I wouldn't argue
that. That is a very private, personal moment.
It was incredibly compelling. I don't know, man. It showed him Hugh Jackson is just a real person, like all of us are.
Everybody is a real person. I mean,
I don't think it was bad. It was personal for sure. But as we know, especially in football, in the NFL, chemistry matters. The way you rally around people matters. Teammates matter. I mean, all of that really does matter. Maybe more so in football, Al, than any other sport. Football may be the ultimate team game where your personal life absolutely can have an impact of what happens on the field, probably like no other sport.
Well, I would say basketball is probably the, you know, of the team sports, the one that would, where the personal comes into play all the time. I just remember not long ago, our very own Isaiah Thomas was dealing with the death of his sister and trying to play in a playoff game. And he's the star of the team.
It's a difficult situation.
There's only five guys there on a football team. You got, you know, on that are playing at one time. There are 11 guys on offense, 11 guys on defense, 11 guys on special teams, and a huge coaching staff. So I think the impact on basketball, I think, is more impactful. But
yeah, but in basketball, though, especially now in basketball, we're more with ISOs and we're more with spreading the court and hitting threes. And, you know, basketball has become a more individual game than ever. Not that you don't have to, you know certain things about your teammates. You do.
But if your individual player is your best player and he's going through some hardships,
That's a tough deal.
It's a tough deal.
I just think in football, people, you know, the fingers on the hand have to work together more than any other sport. I think you've got to be in sync with each other more than any. Baseball's ridiculous. You can just put nine guys out there.
Right,
they can never talk to each other.
Don't speak the same language.
Like they got, well, Todd Archer was on the mound for the Pirates. They took him out. He just got traded from Chris Archer, sorry. He just got traded from Tampa Bay. He doesn't really know his teammates. He's barely been there. Doesn't matter. It literally doesn't matter. It does not matter.
All the signals are the same. It's one out, two outs, you know.
Sometimes it's like,
are you kidding me?
What are we doing here? What are we doing there? But it's just baseball. Baseball is a individual sport wrapped in a team concept, whereas football, it's the ultimate team sport, in my opinion.
Yeah, it takes the most coordination.
It does take a lot of coordination. Look how many coaches. You're watching Hard Knocks, and you see what a coach's meeting looks like, and there's like 25 guys in there. Like, geez, I mean, what do you need to coach a baseball team? Seriously? what do you think game planning is? You know, Bud Black putting the lineup together, you know?
Really, long as you game plan with your pitcher, that's all it takes, huh?
Yeah, it's not that simple. Yes, of course, there's like Steve Foster, the pitching coach, is working with the pitchers and catchers on strategy. There's film. There's studying. There is all that. I'm not trying to downplay the effort they put into it, but there's certainly not 20 people trying to figure out how to play one game.
And let me ask you this. What's the origin of, as the Rockies are playing the Pittsburgh Pirates on AT&T Sports right now, let me ask you this. What's the origin of the glove over the mouth during the catcher pitcher meeting, manager pitcher meeting? What is that all about?
The theory is, and I laugh because I see high school kids do it.
I see guys in the NBA cover their mouth when they're talking to each other. So is it so that the media can't lip read?
Yes. But when I see high school kids do it, nobody's trying to lip read a high school game, you know, but they do it anyways. I think they want to feel like they're, you know, theoretically, you don't want to give away your emotions to your opponent.
Oh, okay.
You know, if you put your hand over your face, you can't tell if you're really
upset. So also to shield emotion?
Yeah, I think it's for those two reasons. But, I mean, it's probably the most overrated. I will tell you this. You'll see a second baseman and a shortstop cover their mouths, and they'll give signals to each other about who's covering the base. Now, they don't want their opponent to know that because you may do a hit and run. And if you know the shortstop is covering the base, as a hitter, if you run a hit and run, you'll want to pull it to shortstop because that'll be a hole. So it's very simple in general. It's either your mouth's open or your mouth's closed. And depending on who the shortstop and second baseman is, gotcha. Like mouth open, you got it. Mouth closed, I got it. So they may switch that back and forth during, they might be, hey, and they'll put their glove up to their mouth and just open mouth, closed mouth, that sort of thing.
I'm over here opening my mouth, closing my mouth.
Now, that specifically is to prevent the other team from seeing who's covering the base.
Or giving away verbal.
You could put on a pickoff play, perhaps, on something like that as well. So there you go. That's what that is. All sorts of little things in baseball. But, you know, once you get to a certain level, you show up and everybody knows to do those little things. It's really not that big of a deal.
Right.
You know,
I think baseball is beautiful.
Oh, it's the best. And, you know,
you don't need a whole lot of coordination, though. I mean, do you really need spring training for baseball? How long is the training season for the NHL?
You don't need anything for NHL. You just drop the pucks and go. You need to develop chemistry with your lines, depending
it's
on.
It's kind of like baseball, huh?
Hockey, in my opinion, takes much more teamwork than baseball. To be able to non-verbally communicate with the people that you play with, that you're matched up with, I think is kind of, that takes some time.
But it's still about spacing and filling out each other, right? You don't need a whole bunch of...
When I go here, you go there, this is kind of what we're running, this is what your responsibilities are. People kind of know. You kind of figure it out quickly. You don't need a lot of practice on that.
Baseball, hockey, baseball, hockey, and then it goes baseball, hockey, basketball, then football. Football is certainly the toughest.
Baseball needs preseason more for pitchers than hitters. Hitters probably need 5 or 6 games, and they're probably ready to go. Pitchers need some time. Pitchers need time just to develop their arm strength, do the right thing. It's really more about pitching. They don't need 6 weeks of it, that's for sure. It's kind of a joke. That's why you see, I got my 3 at-bats, I played my 6 innings, I'm going to go play golf. but before that moment, Alfred, you've seen it. I'm at the clubhouse at 7, 8 o'clock in the morning, I'm doing my stretching, I'm doing my workouts, I'm getting a whole day of training before I get my 3 at-bats and most spring training games are at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, something like that. So they're done by 5. There's not really a lot of night spring training games. And,
I think I like the baseball way. I like the way that, the pros have to be pros. You can't depend on somebody else to get you ready in baseball. You got to work on the things that you need to work on, and there's a system for it. In football, if it's not working, man, you may be out of football.
The worst thing about football, despite how much they practice, they probably don't play enough.
Yes.
It's crazy, right?
Well, I mean, but then you don't really want them to play in preseason, do you?
No, because they're going to get hurt. And then you see idiots like Todd Haley who are advocating for let's get everybody out there, push. And Hugh Jackson's just like, hey, man, it's my team. And you see with Vance Joseph today, I'll commend Vance. It's the right call. It's good. We're fine. Most of the players on the Broncos right now are ready to play. Most. But not all. You got the Todd Haley stuff? Yeah, listen to this.
I have an opinion on it, and we need to get so much done, and I know I said that to you and we joke about it, but if we live in our fears, I mean, our team has to get mentally tougher and be able to fight through the that we got to fight through. We got to change this drastically, and if we got guys that haven't done sitting around doing nothing... I just don't know how we're going to do it.
Well, I respect you saying that. I mean, I used to sit in the same chair. Let me finish. I used to sit in the same chair as you guys sat in. And I used to feel the same way. I just want to kill them, okay? Until all of a sudden, I sat in this chair, and then they're not there. And you don't get them to practice. And you can't get them through, and then you don't have them for 3 weeks. And I'm not living in my fears. That's real. And I think we all can appreciate that. Anything else?
I love it.
Speak now, baby, hold your peace. Yeah. Anything else?
All that being said, on a positive, and we got a long way to go.
But that being said,
we're making progress. There's enough positive in my experience that I'm encouraged.
Okay.
That's good.
Great. Thanks, Coach.
Guys, listen. Didn't need that. I'm excited about what you're doing. I'm going to say it again, but the chair I sit in, a little different than the chair you guys sit in. I get to watch from a different lens. Okay, and I think you guys can all respect that. At the end of the day, I get to drive this bus. And I'm going to get it the way I want it. That's period. That's just how it works. Okay? Al taught me a long time ago. What is it, Al? Give it to me.
your team and do whatever the hell you want.
When it's your team, you do whatever the hell you want. Okay, so this one's mine. So that's just the way it's going to be. And that is of respect of everybody in this room. But this is how we do it. And we'll always have these kind of discussions because I'm only trying to make it better. If something we can do better, we're going to do it better. It's just that simple. All right, let's get out of here.
Woo!
Coach the coaches.
Coach
the coaches.
That's why that guy has a job and has won one game in 2 years. That's why that dude's in charge.
Coach the coaches.
That's what it looks like.
That's courtesy of HBO.
That's what it looks like.
Todd Haley, you know.
Todd Haley.
I got to tell you, man, that guy is a hell of a play caller. Man, he is a hell. Maybe he's a hell of a play caller with Ben Roethlisberger. But I just think the world of the way that he calls a game. I know it didn't really work out for him in Pittsburgh.
Oh, you can see what the head coaching issues would be, though, with him. Some guys are meant to be coordinators. Some guys are meant to be head coaches.
Yeah.
Hugh Jackson's meant to be a head coach. Whether it works out or not, he's got a philosophy on it, and he's not afraid to lay it down.
And
that was impressive.
A little grandstanding going on there.
Well, they know the cameras are on, but do you think that's all that different from the way he really is? I mean, dude, he's kept his job after winning one game in 2 years.
I know, but you know. A little grandstanding. It's a little grandstanding going on.
It makes you wonder, what was it like in that room with the Broncos, with VJ and Mike McCoy?
That's good.
I mean, what do you think that was really like? Probably not. You know what? Let me give VJ a little bit more credit, okay? He's been more assertive in camp this year, right?
Oh, no. No, of course.
He's the loudest voice out there this year.
It's his team.
I'm not hearing Herring or Kolar just scream like lunatics. Not this year, I'm not. If you were to pick out one coach who looks like he's in charge on the Broncos practice field right now, you'd be blind not to say Vance Joseph. So whether he succeeds or fails, I think, you know, hey, man, good for VJ. He said, you know, I read Why We Win, the Billy Packer book, right? Like, how do you coach? It's okay to admit that you don't have it all, you know. I think VJ, if he's watching Hard Knocks, would learn a lot from that right there. Hugh Jackson's just a more experienced head coach, Al. I don't know if he's better than VJ or not, but he's just more experienced in that role.
And you don't forget now.
Coaching the coaches.
You know, those two spent a lot of time in Cincinnati together.
Well, I mean.
They're friends. They're friends. I know they're friends.
Well, he looks like a great friend to have. I don't know if it's going to work out for Cleveland or not, but it was an interesting moment. It was a great moment. We'll see. And you know what? Even if he is grandstanding a little bit for the cameras.
Not Hugh Jackson.
No. John Dorsey, if he's grandstanding a little bit, which I think he probably is. You see he's got his coaches back. So
his coach is not in charge of the NFL draft.
Then they got,
he's in charge of day-to-day operations. And by the way,
they got the great one, Greg Williams, out there, you know, kill the head, and what is it, the body will die, or, you know.
9-39 as a head coach in his NFL career, and Hugh Jackson has a job.
Yep. And I think we saw why last night.
But if you ain't got the goods, I mean, what are you supposed to do?
You got to move on. John Dorsey will have to move on and find somebody who can get better results.
I've seen this guy call a hell of a game, too. I've seen him call a lot of games as coordinators being with the Raiders. But this is going to be really, really interesting to see how it all shakes out. I'm quietly rooting for Baker Mayfield to have a better than expected entry into the NFL.
How can you not root for Baker Mayfield when you watch him last night?
I really wasn't a fan of his antics, but I do want to see him play well because I think we need to bust through that whole, you know, traditional quarterback look. And if he can do it, and I was just giving you the facts about why guys don't get drafted in the top five. At six foot one. He's the shortest quarterback to ever have been drafted in the first round, not named Michael Vick. So let's see what happens.
Okay. off and running. The Rockies are down 3-2. There have been some very, very, very interesting moments in this game already. We'll dig into that. The Big Three is next.
Sandy Clef here to tell you about SCL Mortgage Special Circumstance Lending, locally owned and operated. And if you're self-employed or work on commission, this is the place for you. Bank statement loans are back. You don't need tax returns to do your loan. In some cases, the bank statement loans can be done with credit scores in the low 600s. MySpecialMortgage.com on the web, 303-790-2222. The phone number, SCL Mortgage, licensed by the Colorado Department of Regulatory Agencies, number 1200716.
Covering Training Camp 2018, presented by Mountain High Appliance. Here's Big Al and D-Mac with the Big Three, presented by Sam's Number 3 Diner and Bar.
All right, Alfred. Let's just talk about the tone of camp today, where it's, you know, a veteran rest day, and it's not like they had the day off. I mean, they were still working through things, but it wasn't with the intensity that we've seen. And it'll be less on tomorrow and less on Friday and play on Saturday. This is so different than training camp used to be, right? I mean, in training camp, everybody just used to beat the crap out of each other leading right up to the game, and you just kind of plow through. What do you think about this approach that the Broncos are dealing with and its effectiveness towards getting the team ready? Or does it just prove that preseason is kind of ridiculous, it's too long, and if you don't do these things, you'll literally be killing yourself?
I think we have to look at the way that we view training camp a lot differently now, because there are huge sums of guaranteed money. And those guys with the guaranteed monies and those veterans who have already played years of NFL football, you need to protect those guys so they don't get injured, period. Because they are valuable commodities to your team. You need to get them some work, but the question always is, how much work do you need to get them? I think the way that the Broncos have traditionally done it since Mike Shanahan has been the right way. You know, I remember Champ Bailey having almost, you know, work 2 days, have a day off, work 2 days, have a day off. So I see it and I recognize it, and I think I just appreciate it, because your talented players, they just need to be ready on game day. And we don't question their effort, because they always give you everything they have.
Bongos.
Three.
Did you see, by the way, I do want to do this one first.
All right. Go ahead.
Can you imagine Todd Haley talking that way to Bill Belichick?
No, I cannot.
Why?
I think he'd have too much. He'd have a little bit of fear and respect that would prevent him from saying something like that.
I think he would have been fired right there on the spot.
It was kind of a traitorous type of moment, wasn't it?
It was a bad, bad moment.
Yeah.
So I said that because,
I mean, that's the type of thing that you would get the coach off to the side.
Yes!
And you'd say, hey, listen, I don't want to make a big deal, but listen, here's how I feel about it, blah, 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 blah.
But he was like, for the record, you know, he was hey, I just want to state it for the record.
For the record.
I'm not, you know, for all of those people out there that's looking
and
trying to figure out why the Browns don't do well this
year. Whoever wants to hire me next, I just want everybody to know, because we're on TV here.
We're not working hard enough.
Right.
Yeah, we're not working hard enough.
Yeah, he was trying to, whether he knew it or not, he was trying to embarrass Hugh Jackson.
Hugh Jackson looked really good in his
response.
Oh, yeah, in his response and put down of Haley, but I was just thinking, what would happen if that was Bill Belichick? Probably would have just ate all those words and talked to his wife about it.
Okay. What if Belichick would have just looked at him after he said that and goes, I think you and I should talk after the meeting.
You're getting really good with the Belichick.
I think I went too high energy there, to be quite honest with you.
Todd, I think perhaps we should just, me and you should just talk after this meeting. Everybody else can leave. Thanks. Can you get my secretary on the phone?
And that's really good.
Can you get my secretary in a cardboard box and bring them in here, please?
Okay, bongos.
Charlie's gone.
Three.
Alfred.
My name.
The Rockies.
Got blew out last night.
Are hitting David Dahl third and Nolan Arenado fourth. It kind of, I just didn't quite understand it, so I sent Drew a text. I sent Drew a text thinking the game wasn't on TV, because I just assumed an afternoon game with the Pirates would not be televised on AT&T Sportsnet.
I think this is the last day game during the week before school starts.
And I was like, and Drew gave me a response saying, Buddy's Bud Black is trying to get the beginning of the line, shaking up the beginning of the lineup. He's trying to get them going a little bit. And so by inserting Dahl, he's giving more of an impetus to just get things going. And then David Dahl hits a two-run homer, and Drew shoots me a text back saying, yeah, how about Dahl hitting third down? While Drew's on the air, by the way. And, you know, I respect Drew's baseball knowledge.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
great call last night. Even though it was a blowout, the glowing compliments to Don Baylor on Don Baylor night. I thought it was good.
My question, I can
watch him and listen to him and pay attention to the Rockies.
They do a great broadcast. They just
even when
lucky.
The games are not entertaining.
Yes. What do you think about that concept of things just aren't going, so we're going to shake things up? What do you think about that rather than just staying pat and the move to, you know, do that, move Nolan to the four spot?
Well, I wish that they would have did that earlier on with our pitching staff in the seventh inning, eighth inning. And you know, sometimes, you know, Ottavino's been solid in the eighth for the most part. But in the seventh and ninth inning, we should have had, you know, and Wade Davis has been solid. But, well, maybe I'm just thinking about the seventh inning. Maybe shakeups are good in sports, period. But when you have a group that is underperforming, even though you've committed over $100 million to that process, you said stick with it. You said stick with
it. It's a quirky situation. Right.
You said you got to have a plan and stick to it.
But maybe
you still believe that way.
Well, I do.
Now, I was going with you on this. I'm like, man, this is thinking it up.
I do, but maybe you have to be subtle about it. And maybe there's a time deeper in the season where, you know, here we go. Like, we throw the norms out, and then we make a push, and it doesn't matter.
So throw the plan out the window.
Maybe. I mean, you got to be malleable, you know? It's like with the Broncos' offensive attack, do you want it to... What I want is it to be flexible. To be... Maybe it's one way this week. Maybe it's a different way the next week. You know what I'm saying? Like, maybe we are designed...
You want it to be professional.
Well, listen, I watch what Belichick does. What can I tell you? And you really can't pinpoint what type of offense they have because it really literally changes week to week. Bongos. Bong, bong, boing. Got it.
Three!
When we come back, one of our favorite writers, Robert Klemko, who's for Sports Illustrated, lives in Denver. Boy,
man,
talk about interesting timing.
Wow.
Ray Lewis goes into the Hall of Fame, and he rips and destroys Ray Lewis in the NFL PR system. Wait till you hear the story with that, with Robert, on the air next.
Covering Training Camp 2018, presented by Body Armor Sports Drink. Here's Big Al and D-Mac.
Robert Klemko writes for Sports Illustrated, lives here in Denver, and he had an interesting assignment a couple years ago. There was a story being written about the murders that Ray Lewis was connected to. And Robert's job, they were talking to the families of the victims, and Robert's job was to go try to get a or give an opportunity to Ray Lewis to, you know, respond. So not a, you know, pretty dicey assignment, right, Al? I mean, that's something that, you know, is going to be tough to do. You know that.
Yeah, and on top of that, don't forget now, Ray Lewis pleaded guilty to obstruction of justice. Now, that's not really talked about a lot in connection with the stabbing deaths of the two men in 2000. So he pleaded guilty to, not telling the truth and giving all the right information to those that were involved in law enforcement. So the questions that were asked later down the line, I thought they were all valid. I thought they were good questions, and the opportunity to answer those questions should, if I'm Ray Lewis, should have been looked at and responded with, let me tell you what happened there, and you know, I want to tell you that was a bad time in my life, and And I, you know, I'm sorry for all the things that happened during then, but it was not handled that way. And Mr. Klimko brought us that story again. And sometimes it's good to be reminded that, you know, it's the full story, not just parts of it.
Well, the story kind of turns into how everybody rallies and protects Ray Lewis. And Robert, good afternoon. Thank you so much for joining us again.
Yeah, sorry about a minute ago.
That's okay. No problem. I'm going to guess over the past 48 hours since this story came out, you have received some pretty angry response. Am I right about that?
You know, it's been overwhelmingly positive, but there is that, you know, that 10-15% of people who, you know, for whatever reason are angry about it, especially when you're challenging a football team and a person who is revered, you know, in that community.
The timing of the story, I am curious why it was published right after Ray Lewis, you know, went into the Hall of Fame. What was the thinking there?
You know, it was published the night before.
Sorry.
And I hadn't thought about the episode in a long time, and I was watching NFL Network, an interview with Ray Lewis, and, you know, it was like an NFL Network interview. It was a lot of softballs, nothing really challenging, and, you know, you wouldn't expect it to be very challenging anyway, because it's the occasion of him going to the Hall of Fame. But I thought some context would be important. I also thought about the episode with the Patriots that I wrote about, where Ben Volen of the Boston Globe asked Tom Brady about Alex Guerrero, the trainer working with Julian Edelman, and who was suspended for PEDs. And everybody on Twitter and on social media and all these Patriots fans criticizing Ben Volen for asking this question in that setting as though it were some sort of gotcha moment. So I wanted to write about the how these NFL PR teams help players avoid tough questions. And this whole thing with Ray, you know, was I think, a great example.
The story, I guess, was really rebirth, I guess, in Super Bowl 48. Or was it 49? Was it 47? 40, anyway, it was the Ravens 49 Super
49er.
Bowl. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And when we were in New Orleans, when you would first assign this deal, it was something that we talked about on Radio Row, and we had people frowning at us talking about, you know, Why are you guys bringing shade to this great moment? You know, it's a Super Bowl. We don't need that story. I mean, me and D-Mac, we were like, hey, that was a great story. And the question should have been answered, and it never got answered in the proper response. Is that normal when you deal with people of high profile, or do they just answer?
Yeah, you know, I think what would have been normal, what I would have considered normal, is if Ray had just said, hey, no comment. You know, this isn't the time. What we needed to know, really, is if Ray had reached out to those people and that family. I mean, he crafted this persona in the public as being this religious person who was all about forgiveness and reconciliation and making amends. And we wanted to know if he had had any contact with the families of those men that had died during that fight in Atlanta. But Ray, you know, wasn't ready to answer any of those questions. And rather than just say no comment, you know, he got loud. And it kind of mobilized the PR team against me in ways that I hadn't anticipated, and honestly, ways that I haven't encountered since.
So what have you learned through this process then? Do you think it's an isolated incident with the Ravens PR staff and Ray Lewis, or do you think it's systematic of the way information is delivered now?
Well, you know, I look at basketball teams and I look at Major League Baseball teams and hockey teams, and I've covered games in all three of those sports. And they have way more open locker rooms, way more players. The NFL is unique in the sense that they limit access to big-time players to once a week at press conferences. Now, even if you go up to Denver Broncos right now, you can't grab Von Miller walking off the field and ask him a couple questions, or Case Keenum. Those guys are protected. And they become even more protected when they've done something wrong or they're the subject of some controversy. I remember going to Washington during Robert Griffin III's last season there as a backup when he was behind Kirk Cousins. And there was a PR person whose job it was during the open locker room media sessions to stand by Robert Griffin's locker and protect him from media questions and shoo away anybody that wanted to talk to him. And I think it's a ridiculous thing. But we end up not really challenging it because, you know, we all want to get along. We're all looking towards that next story.
You know, the storylines behind the entire Hall of Fame class were somewhat all unique this past Hall of Fame. We had this hodgepodge of talent that was displayed there. But do you think going forward we will another case like what Ray Lewis was involved in would give him access to play again so that he could have a Hall of Fame type of career? Or do you think that it would be put on hold and he would be set out for, well, we know what the personal conduct situation that you'll have to sit out four games no matter what if you're involved in something like this. So do you think that it would give him, I guess, a way to continue on with the Hall of Fame career if it was today?
I don't know that it would have derailed his path to the Hall of Fame, but you raise a good point. And what if that had happened today? If a player was convicted of obstruction of justice in a double murder investigation, I'd have to think that there would be a lengthy suspension where there really wasn't one
right.
in Ray Lewis's case originally.
Okay, Robert, fascinating insights into the way the machine works. And let me ask you this, just on a bigger sort of topic. Do you think fans care?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think Ravens fans that I have talked to and that, you know, I've talked to after this story came out have told me that they loved watching Ray Lewis as a player, and that's where they draw the line. And then, I know people right. that don't have Ray Lewis jerseys because they don't really respect who he is or who he was off the field, but that doesn't mean they're not going to cheer for him on Sundays. So I think there's a lot of people that kind of draw that middle ground. Another great example is Ben Roethlisberger in Pittsburgh.
Mm-hmm.
I know female fans of the Steelers who still watch games, who still go to games and cheer them on, but they can't stand Ben Roethlisberger because what he has seemed to have gotten away with.
Yeah, it's an interesting conundrum. Like, do we just want to put on blinders and not think about it? You know what I mean? Do we just really want to watch the sports, Robert, and just have fun? Or do we really care? And it puts you in an interesting situation as a journalist, too. Like, well, what am I doing here, right? Like,
I'm not
going to
be popular in many locker rooms when I called out the PR staff.
The
funny thing about that whole episode with the Ravens was, you know, I was 23 and I was saying to myself, golly, I'm never going to be able to cover this team again because everyone here is going to hate me. And then I was in the locker room 2 years later and I realized that the only two players that were still on the roster were Terrell Suggs and Joe Flacco. You know, and there's a lot of changeover in this
right.
league. And I think a lot of people
right.
in the league knew that story and recognized that the Ravens were in the wrong, which is why I didn't really have a lot of fear in putting it out there.
Mm. Good stuff, Robert. Mm. A fascinating read, and we always enjoy having you on the Where are you off to next? What's your next story? Where are you going?
I'm actually going to the Cardinals-Chargers preseason game on Saturday and then doing like a West Coast swing up to Seattle.
All right, well, let us know how Josh Rosen is because Al's having buyer's remorse here.
I really am.
Thank you, guys.
All right, Robert. Robert Klemko of Sports Illustrated. Football at 4 is next.